brought to you by Coors tonight.
Yep.
Welcome back. Special guest night for all you guys that called in and bitched me out about it. Speaking over Howard, I made a mandatory request. I guess that's not really...
No, that's kind of a...
I made a demand that Howard have at least 2 pints before he got here.
Yeah, so I've exceeded. I've excelled at that so far.
Above and beyond. Never shoot for second place.
So just to clarify, this is episode 36 of the Sliding Podcast. We have our good friend Howard Crosston on once more after quite a interesting episode the first time. There was a lot of people who had a lot to say about it.
It was good for me. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Howard has an army is what we found out.
You piece of shit. You had the world champion on and you talked over him, you arrogant piece of shit. Ouch. Yeah. I was excited too. I liked it.
Yeah, I thought we had fun. So yeah, Howard's back here with the Hardy crew. They're doing kind of a tour around the Montana, Idaho area. Fishing, having fun. I think they're going to go film with Kelly tomorrow, so that should be cool.
Looking forward to that. Huh? Yeah. Looking forward to that.
That'll be a hoot.
Yeah.
So we got a bunch
of... Do we know where we're going? Do we know what we're doing?
I've got no idea where we're going. Me I'm hoping you do.
No. I don't even know what we're doing. That'll work out.
Do you know where we're going?
I thought I was being left at home. I thought you guys had a camera guy.
I have no idea.
Okay.
Well, we might be working.
Cool.
We'll work it out. We'll just fish. It'll be fine.
So tonight you may notice we're drinking beers. This is different than what we normally do.
Braden always wants us to drink beer on the thing.
One time.
Every time. Why don't we have a beer?
Every once in a while I like having a beer.
The only thing that can put my mouth more into hyperdrive than just being awake is three beers.
Yeah. That's the truest words you've ever spoken.
Ask Jerry. Yeah.
Well, we could take that one off you, I guess. But
it's only half beers because they're not like those things you guys drink.
No, it's not real beer. It's pretty weak.
It's beautiful. Coors should sponsor me.
I've had about 12 this afternoon, so I should
be okay. So you got capped up to like two of your normal beers back on?
Yeah, it's equivalent to like two English beers. So.
That's good.
If you work for Coors Light and you want to sponsor our show, we are big fans of your product. Appreciate
I'm
your
sure
work. Thank you. I've got a Rainier tonight. If you guys want to sponsor us,
I tried that once. It wasn't really.
It's hometown. Hometown beer.
I didn't dislike it. Just wasn't.
I find it very similar to a PBR. Just like kind of a shitty beer that has a little bit more flavor than this. We had a guy break down in our driveway, truck driver. Yeah, so
you've got customers banging at the door.
We let them in.
All right, so we've got a bunch of questions for Howard tonight.
Did you hear that the guy at the truck, he broke down, he's coming here. He picked up, he bought a rod online. He bought a rod online.
No
so
shit.
He's stopping in here.
Oh, really?
And he's coming, he's got a big load on that thing. He's got like a excavator or something on it.
And
I was looking out the window, Hunter's got his horses out in the pasture. And all of a sudden, I'm just standing there and all of a sudden, bam, bam, bam. And I look up and I'm like, oh, he's coming unbuttoned. And he's losing a wheel off the rear end.
No shit.
That's why he's out front. And he goes, yeah, I was just stopping by to pick up that rod I ordered. I'm like, yeah, you can leave that there as long as you want. Yeah. You know, yeah. But it's our yard ornament out front right now. What a drag for him.
This is
a
tangent, but it's kind of what we do. You remember when that minivan showed up at 2 a.m. with two tires out on one side? There was a mini rock slide down by...
I thought it was that way.
No, I was down there because they got picked up by a tow truck from West Yellowstone and they wanted to go back to Ennis. And the tow truck said, fuck no, and dropped him here. And that guy is having the worst day of his life. And Matt offers him a beer for the drive home once he gets his car fixed. And the guy goes, nah, I probably shouldn't. Matt goes, yeah, that's probably smart, you know, given the...
Exactly.
What's happened.
I don't know.
All right, so we've got a bunch of questions. We didn't have Howard on here. Just
did we have a whole bunch?
Talk.
We got all night.
Yeah, we had a bunch.
We got a bunch from them.
Yeah.
And by the way, for those who did call in and just ream me out and then write back and apologize, there's no fun in that. I mean, Howard chewed my ass on one, too.
I was reading one where the guy goes, after you responded to somebody's comment, oh, phone problem. You know who laughed a lot about our phone problem was Hank Patterson.
He's probably the one calling.
He said he was just dying laughing when I got up to go take
gonna,
care of the phone.
Yeah,
so
now the thing's
going
to do it again because if we get to unplug him, and then for the last two times, twice, it's got to 11 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, Oh, shit. The phones are still unplugged.
Yeah, you asked me to remind you last time, and I realized today that I didn't.
Yeah, that's not good from a business perspective.
No.
Unplugging the phones and leaving them unplugged.
Probably talk to your people. So we do have a bunch of questions for Howard. There was that one comment. I don't know what he said, but he must have reamed you, because as soon as you responded to another one saying, yes, I was excited, I talked too much, I was excited to talk to Howard too, whatever. And the guy goes, I'm sorry, I deleted my comment.
I know that guy really well.
That was the one, and I'm like, dude, that was jacked.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Well, that's cool, because I just said you don't have to do that. My feelings don't get hurt. That one did a little bit. I felt like a dick.
He's super motivated to get better. Yeah. He's a cool guy. Cool. It's called Tim. He's a nice guy.
Braden. He is super motivated to get better.
Yeah. That's why I yelled at Kelly.
I wish you would hurry.
trying. Okay, so we've got a bunch of questions for Howard, but I wanted to start. We're going to do a special edition of what is Howard pissed off about today?
Oof.
Howard,
this is not a good day for that topic. There's two things.
Wait a minute. You didn't go in the park, did you?
No.
Okay. No. That could be all night.
There's two things. There's one of them I cannot discuss, and I'm not going to discuss it. The second one is...
Can it be worse than toilet hovers?
It's bad.
We'll wait and have another beer and come back.
Wait till the camera's turned off.
Let's come back to this after another beer.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Delta.
Delta Airlines?
Delta Airlines.
Lost the
bag. There goes that sponsorship.
Yeah.
Oh, they lost your stuff?
Well, I got here. Fine.
But that's it?
Bags are in Paris for 4 days.
Nice. Oh, I got a rain jacket for you. You left last time. Still sitting down there.
You can keep that thing. It's fine. Yeah. Just give it to somebody you don't like.
Give it to somebody you don't like.
I bet if I called Squalla, we could get you one.
Yeah,
all your shit? Your rods and reels and everything?
No, I got the rods. Mm. I had no clothes, so I stank, but I could fish.
Nice.
So that was fine.
Or just like everybody else that works for us.
It's like Johnny every day. Right. He stinks every day on purpose.
But it's not the first time they've screwed me.
Yeah.
I flew into the Keys 2 years back, and the connection was at 5 p.m. down to Key West. And we got in at like 3. Like moseyed to the gate, you know, go to the thing, say, oh no, it's gone. It left at 4. And we're like, scheduled for 5. It's like, yeah, it's been leaving at 4 all week. The runway lights are out after the storm. So, I'm like, but it's scheduled for 5. Yeah. Like, but everybody knows it's going at 4.
Everybody but.
Exactly.
Overnight in Atlanta. Lost like 2 days getting there. It's like, yeah.
All right, well, thanks, Delta.
They don't compensate.
Just do better.
I heard somebody say that about Delta, and I don't know for sure, but the ring around Saturn was made up of lost luggage from Delta. I may have improvised Delta. It could have been any one of them. They were pissed off.
Widely applicable.
Yeah. We routinely have bags show, I don't know which airline, but people get here, and then they have to drive them down the next day.
I would actually like that job. I think that'd be the best job working for an airline besides maybe being a pilot. It's just the
driving people's lost shit. So you get here and they can just go, you piece of shit. I hope you're paying for my fucking wig, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I feel like most of the time they're appreciative once the luggage shows up. But I mean, that's a gorgeous drive from Bozeman down here. Yeah. And
I get you.
You know, you could be over serving people on the airplane, or you could be out in nature. Yeah. All right, well, let's get into some questions on that tangent. This one comes from N. Russell 11. He's one of our big commenters on YouTube. He asks us a bunch of great questions. Yeah, he's got good questions. He said, Howard, please explain why the drop back bung was developed. So I guess maybe why and then maybe a how.
Yeah. I mean, the first reason is I really wanted to ruin fly fishing. That was like the main focus.
Pretty much single-handedly the whole you did.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to follow up from the great work you've done previously. But
I just thought I ruined the US.
No, you have done the whole world. I've done pretty much a lot of places. So no, really, I mean, for me, it was, so back in the UK, we fish a lot of small still waters. It's stocked fish, it's stocked rainbows. And a big thing is the indicator, loads of guys fish it. When we're like fishing competitions, you have to be good with an indicator to do well. It's a popular method. But it's just boring, and it's pretty limited in There's not a lot you can do with it. You know, there's so many things, changing the depth, all that kind of stuff. But I'd been in Tasmania for the Worlds and seen a fly that they had, which had the big foam tube out the back. And they were using it for indicator fishing. But the reason they used it was because all their lakes are shallow and weedy. So they wanted to find the holes in the weed. So they throw it out there and they let it sit. And if it doesn't stand up, they know the fly is sitting on weed. Copy. So they use it to find the holes in the, and then, you know, when it stands up, you know that you're hanging free. So after I'd seen that, I thought, well, you know, if I sort of tweak that so it's a little bit more weight sensitive, that's going to tell me all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, is it hanging free? And I realized pretty quickly when I started playing around with it that if they picked it up and took the weight off it, it fell over. So then I got all these drop back bites, which I never expected. And it just like, it just went from being, you know, some days it would be like 90% of the time. The thing just fell over and you're striking the fish there.
Wow.
And it just went, and it made indicator fishing interesting for me, in all honesty, because it's a boring thing on a lake. I find anyway, personally.
No, I can't do it.
I love it.
And
I can do it all day. It is boring as shit, but I'm just hypnotized.
Yeah, it is. And that gave me, it just gave me something extra with it, and I loved it for a while. You know, and I still do. I still fish it. I don't mind doing it.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that was the. I only got to try it once, but my boat was sinking, and so I had real issues. So I haven't been on the lake all year. I freaking never could get my freaking boat to quit leaking. I have no idea. So I was trying to buy a new one. So before you got here, so we go up there.
Yeah.
Got the one I wanted. Called the guy. We're gonna be at a boat show. I said, I'll run down and get it, you know, tomorrow. He goes, well, it'll take 12 days. I said, what do you mean? It's going to be at the boat show. I'm going to come down, give you money. That's how it works. And I leave with it.
Exchange of goods. Yeah.
And so I still don't have a boat. But we, if we want to do the lake, probably can use Rich's, though.
That'd be cool. Yeah. That's cool. It's cool what a fish.
Yeah, that the foam tail thing. So what were they doing? So if it stood up, that meant that the weight went through the hole.
Yeah. So that basically had a hook with a foam cylinder out the back, and they put a skirt on it, tied out of poly yarn, but like a red skirt, like a red skirt on it. And they had it on the dropper, two bead-headed nymphs below it, imitating that big sort of, like a big mahogany claret kind of dun that they've got, called Highland dun, I think. Like a really big upwing. We fished a lot of nymphs on the lakes for that thing. And it's so weedy. Those lakes are shallow, big weed banks. And when the light's bad, you just can't see the channels and the drops. And they'd throw it out there, and when the weight came tight, it'd, you know,
straight up.
Stand up and you can see it. And I just really, I mean, I took the hook away because a lot of our competitions, you don't have to have a hook in there. You do in the Worlds, but not in our local stuff. And it just made it a lot more sensitive. And I made it longer as well, was one of the big tricks.
What do you mean in the, you have to have a hook in there, the indicator?
Yeah, in the world.
So anything that's fuzzy or whatever's got to have a hook in it?
Yeah, the rules now, you can't have foam in an indicator fly.
Right.
And it's got to have a hook in it, so.
It's just a way to get around.
Yeah.
And be able to fish.
And we don't even do it very often, in all honesty, in the world. It's not a method. Right. You know, it's very rare we do it. So, but yeah, it's interesting. I caught a lot of flack for it.
Oh,
I don't care.
I watched when it was posting up. You ruined it.
Yeah, we had a couple questions.
Took
about
a lot of heat off of me.
Also, I don't. Oh no, I did. Never mind.
You're welcome.
That's a fulling mill product, and it looks like everybody in the fly fishing world except us carries it. So
we have some.
Oh, we do.
Yeah, I'm sure I've seen them somewhere.
Yeah, I have.
Well, then buy them from us. Slidein.com.
I'll sign the packets. They'll be worth even less.
Yeah, there you go. Should be kind of confusing.
Very good.
All right. Well, thanks for the question, N. Russell. Let's go to another one from Philip Van Campen, who's, once again, a big, big commenter on our channel. He says, I'd like to hear about Hardy and Howard's approach to designing long rods. I own a 10-2 UL and a 9-9 Zephyrus UL. They're both amazing casters, and the latter is my go-to wet fly rod. Obviously, the team at Hardy still appreciates more than just competition applications when it comes to long rods. This is not the case with many of their competitors.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you know, the competition thing for me is one thing, you know, but I've fished since I was a kid, and I enjoy spider wet fly fishing and all that other stuff as well. And you need, and longer rods for that are better, you know, better line control, better mending. So I try, I mean, we have different series of rods, and we have some rods which are a little bit more tweaked towards the competition side of it, because that's something I do a lot of. But equally, you know, we have like 10, 3, 4, 5 weights, which are just great wet fly swinging rods, you know. So we try and do something for everybody within a sensible assortment of SKUs.
What are your lake, do you have a lake rod that you...
Yeah.
Do you run 10-footers up on the lakes? 10-footers?
10-footers, unless... typically on
10-footer or 10-4?
10-footer. Yeah. But typically, we don't use 4 weights. We use like 6 through 8
I'm a
weights.
6 or 7 guy. Yeah. All my lake rods are 6 or 7s.
We use that heavier stuff. So for me, my 10-foot 6 weights, me go-to, all-round, do-everything kind of rod. The only time that changes is when we fish off the bank. So when we fish off the bank, I usually drop to 9.5. Just so I've got that inwind, you know, power to get the line through, because a lot of time we're fishing into strong wind, you know, when the fish are on them downwind banks. And
yeah, I saw you someplace once in a mountain where it was virtually impossible to dig through it.
Yeah.
It was just howling at you.
Yeah, yeah. So,
I bet it did.
Yeah, it was only like a 70-footer. What a chump. With no back.
I can't tell you how many people, I know we talked about on the podcast after, but after going out and seeing you in the boat for 2 days, I guess just one day, we were on foot the other day. You know, just like, I go out with all these guys who I used to think were really good casters. I'm like, well, Howard would put it there.
I don't know if...
I also did love the, you're cracking me up at lunch, I think. Us and Jake and Peter and Al pulled over, and Kelly's out nymphing, and you kind of walk back up to the boat.
Sorry for that noise.
That shouldn't bother anyone.
Still full of food, and there's flies just coming up from under the table. I was thinking it was Howard's feet.
No, well, they're big enough. They attract a lot.
Yeah, I forgot about that 13 or 15 foot.
Oh, Lord.
So anyway.
So Howard comes back up. I don't think you'd moved a fish on a streamer yet. You've been throwing them all morning. And you're like, my Euro nymphs are for sale if anybody wants them. Yeah, I think I'm a streamer guy now.
Yeah, they're really
that
not.
That one brown was...
I figured that was tongue-in-cheek.
That one brown was...
That was cool. Yeah.
That would have done it.
Yeah.
That one that... I don't think we got that one. The one that rolled it right in the beginning. We got one big one, and then we...
Yeah,
had,
we got one
but
good
there
one.
Was one really...
Yeah, I missed
real one.
One
that showed but didn't hit.
Yeah. But I mean, to be honest, I mean, I just like fishing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't... You know, most people say, oh, you just all you do is Euronymph. I really don't. I fish absolutely everything.
I can promise he doesn't after watching him cast a fly rod. I know
he's pigeon down the same thing in streamers. It's, and I fish dry flies more than I.
It's crazy.
Time and place.
You get known for something.
And
all of a sudden it becomes a weight. And, you know, but I just love it all. It doesn't matter what it is.
I'm sure it's, you know, yourself, George Daniel, people come to you for the Euro-nymphing stuff, and people come to Kelly for the streamer stuff. Well, most of you guys are really well-rounded in all disciplines. George can do it
everything.
All.
Yeah. You know, he's a great guy. He's a great angler.
It was funny. I was watching him. We were doing a podcast. I think it was after you were here when we did...
was it April's podcast? Yeah. She was trying to get you guys to fight each other about...
All right, but George does, like, we were talking shit. It was after I made that comment, something about the Euro thing. And he said, or one of hundreds. But, and George doesn't, I saw this show where he was with Tom Rosenbauer and they're fishing somewhere out east. And he asked Tom how he picked his nymphs, right? And anybody that doesn't know George, you don't get much better than George, right? He's just so well-rounded. And he grew up like we did, knowing all your entomology and how the bugs moved and what way they swim and how, you know, where your fly should be and what zone and what time of day. And the Rosemary asked him, how do you pick your nymph? Because I look for something that's shiny and gooey. I asked George, did you like have to dig your tongue out with a fork after you said that? It's like, holy shit. And then he got expounding on it like you did. How he says, you know, and he wrote, you know, he's wrote a lot of books, but he was basically just, you know, got pigeonholed on that one for whatever reason. And he says, you know, I just don't do it that much. Right. He says, I love to run dry flies. I love to run the hatch. I love to run this. I love to run that. He goes, and he said, when they're tying classes, they have to tie all season, but they can't tie a Euro nymph.
Yeah.
He says, you will learn to tie a dry fly, a wet fly. You yeah. will learn how to do a nymph with the right body. And you'll.
Yeah,
and he says, you go in and he goes, and we're all done. When you've got it, then you can do it. He says, yeah. because there's nothing, you know, you just do it. And, yeah. But he was, when he said shiny and gooey, I'm like, with a fork down your tongue.
So the mental thing is, I think if, the second you have anything to do with competition fishing, people go, you're a nymph. Mm-hmm. That's it. And I mean, I know all the top guys, who, mm-hmm. you know, and there is not one of them who relies on that one method.
So mm-hmm.
they're all like, they're at the same level with everything. You know, you pick a dry fly rod, a streamer rod, a wet fly rod, a dry dropper rod, a nymph rod, and they're just, you know, it's that consistent super high level with everything. But we get tagged as a if you're a competition angler, you get tagged with that.
Sure. You're that's all I heard about for everybody. Yeah. That's all I heard about it for, in the, especially in the first 5 or 6 years. I think there was more of it when they first showed up.
Yeah.
It was really going on. And everybody won on Euro nymphing. For the most part,
yeah,
their number wise,
it's not always. It's, no, because what happens is initially, like Euro nymphing was a big advantage, like the long leader, fine mm-hmm. tippet stuff, light fly, that was a big advantage. But everybody's got better at that. Mm-hmm. So now what's happened is what the deciding factor usually in these competitions is when the fishing switches and it gets really hard, people flip out now and they start to fish the dries a lot more. Particularly in the latter sessions in most competitions. Not always, but mm-hmm. in a lot of them. And you've got to be really good at that as well. You know, and so as everybody's got better at that Euro nymph game, you know, in the competitions, mm-hmm. all of the other stuff has actually just circled back around and become as important, if not more important, than the Euro nymph thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been interesting.
Yeah. How was Worlds this year?
That was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like, we were right there. I mean, it was painful because we were up as high as second as a team and we really wanted a medal this year. And, you know, the guys have put so much work in. They're all good anglers and some of them are new to the competition thing and new to the world team. And they have worked so hard and they've driven hundreds, if not thousands of miles to practice and everything. And we were right there. We were second, then we were third, then we were back up again. And we had a really bad fourth day. We had a bad chain of draws and we slipped in the end down to like 6, I think we ended up. But yeah, but the fishing was, you know, Czech Republic's cool, but they've got some problems. They've got some problems with their rivers, with predation, water temperature, and the fishing's become more uneven than it used to be. It used to be like a really even fishery. So to level it out, they did introduce some stockfish.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the river spiked 2 days before the competition, all those stockfish moved. And I mean, one of the beats I got had 500 stock of rainbows in it. Wow. It was full of them.
Did you catch one?
40 something of them.
That's about right. A couple.
But, you know, the guy, it was an American guy who had it before me, Jack Arnott, really good angler. Probably one of the best US anglers now from a competition perspective. Great guy. He had 60 something. He had it first and I had it second. But yeah, I mean, that's those parts of it in the competition I don't like. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd much prefer it to be fishing on wild fish and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it goes back to that whole thing. You've got to be good at sort of everything from wild fish to coarse fish to stock fish. You know, we were catching a lot of chub and roach in this one.
What's coarse fish?
So we call whitefish trash.
Gotcha. Yeah, trash fish. Of course. Gotcha.
So, yeah, mainly on dry
plots. Europeans get a better name than for everything.
Everything.
It's the same damn thing, but it just sounds better.
Yeah.
And you throw the accent in, right? And it's like, okay, pick up a chick line.
Yeah.
You fish coarse fish. You know, you and I say it sounds like shit. He says it, it's like, oh, he's a doll.
But no, it was cool. It was good championships. American guys did really well again, and you know they're getting.
Where did end? Who? What was the place thing? What was the?
Oh, we looked as high as six. That's where we were.
Yeah. Where was America?
They were up there.
They were there. They get second.
No, I'm not
third.
Talking about that.
Good.
Let's change the subject. Those guys.
I never hear about that stuff anymore.
They're dangerous now. They really are. They've got their stuff together.
Why don't we have? This is going to be a weird thing for our podcast. Why don't we have Kelly ask a question?
A question? I happen to have one. What still intrigues you about fishing? I'm going to lead you on this, that mine is completely fly design now. But I mean, just not like anything it could be, but mine is pretty much, not that I've mastered everything in the world, but it's just, it's like to me, I can go out and do whatever and be okay. But to me, it's just, I got to do something at the vise to go out and play to see if it'll work. And that's my intrigue. You know, reading water, getting the fish to set his head up or whatever, which all that's kind of, it's there. It's just, that doesn't change much. But
okay.
What keeps you going back to the river, I guess?
So for me, just thinking off the top of my head, it is most probably, I mean, I've put my entire life into, not my entire life into competition fishing, but a good chunk of it into getting better at everything and mm-hmm. becoming more refined. The thing that intrigues me is how some people who technically we're all probably at a similar level, but some people are still better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll call out, there's a youngish guy, he's in his early 30s called Pierre Kuntz. He's a French competitor. He's just won the world championships individually for the third time in a row, back to back. That has never been done in the history of competitive fly fishing. So I can do all the thin leader stuff that he does really well. I can dry fly fish, I can do it all. But for some reason, he is just,
right.
You know, mm-hmm. and that intrigues me. Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is.
You know, something.
I don't get what the X factor is that mm-hmm. pushes him that little. I mean, I can guess, you know, he's in a team of five anglers, all of equally high ability and performance. You know, Grégoire Jugrelet, he's a very good friend of mine. He's one of the best anglers in the world who's never been world champion. He's been second twice, third twice. He's been right up there. And I think when you've got five guys, all of that uber high level, all playing off each other, you know, maybe, you know, Pierre can just suck off that and that just gives him that little bump above everybody else. But I mean, prior to him, you know, Pascal Cognard won it three times, but it was over a 10-year period. He's won it 3 years off the bat, you know. That is like mind-blowing to me.
You know? There's always one of them in every sport.
Yeah,
and you think about your
eternal,
Tiger Woods,
the eternal question.
Joey Chestnut. The other one I was thinking of is Magnus Carlsen. You know, the chess guy. He's the greatest chess player in the history of chess.
Is he a Czech? What was he?
No, he's. Oh, he might be.
From Russia.
Yeah,
Russia.
I don't think he's from Russia. I think he's somewhere.
I remember that.
Yeah, but he's. I think he's, you know, 35 or something now, but he was a wunderkind and. And, you know, came onto the scene at 9 years old and whatever, but, you know,
alien.
They asked him something similar and he goes,
right,
he is an alien.
It's frightening.
They asked him something similar, like, what keeps you going back when you've been the best in the world for 15 years? He goes, well, it's pursuit of perfection. You know, it's.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And I wonder with this guy, if, you know, being around those other five.
How tall is that guy?
He's short.
Really? That's my theory.
The short guy.
Oh, it's always, to me, when I knew somebody was running with me and they were really tall, particularly spotting fish and angles, when you start playing angles when you're 6'4", 6'5",
Yeah.
Just rod articulation with, I mean, nymph fishing.
Yeah,
yeah. Pre Euro. It doesn't matter. Yeah. That angle, that, you know, looking through thing. I mean, to me, the greatest anglers in the world can read water better than 90. You know, that's the thing I think has done. If I ever decide to write a book or do another thing, it's going to be about reading water, because so few people read, I mean, actually read it and feel it and see it, understand what it's doing underneath that they can't see. And that angle thing, like the first time we fished, and you went up on that rock, and I was watching if you slipped that rock on the right side. And if you'd have thrown that son of a bitch up there and just let it go, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get this. And he went, and he puts your rod, I'm like, prick. And it was like, but it was, you know, we're the same height, so we don't have any advantage. But Johnny and I would be places, in, especially in a boat, and just like we were on the mow one day, and he was seeing weed lines that I couldn't see. Yeah. And he's only 6 inches, what is he, 6'4" or something?
Only.
I mean, thinking about it, in a boat, you're already up, you know, off, you're above the water, and you're looking down, and he can see an edge that I couldn't. Yeah. I'm getting the light refraction. It's just, it goes, I can see the weed beds, and awesome, boom, I can just see gray.
Do you know the math behind it? Because I know that's one of the first things when I was learning about Euronymph.
What happened to our bartender?
He's asleep.
I think I'm playing bartender now. You need a beer?
Huh? Oh, you've been fired.
Here, I'll let you hand that to him. Play bartender. This is Jake from Hardy.
Jake from Hardy.
Jake, whose name I don't know how to pronounce.
Great. Thank you, Neil.
Well done, Jake.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
Yeah, go on. I'll take it.
So I think when I was learning about Euronymphing, one of the first things I read was like longer rod really helps in terms of fishable distance, you know, and that I can't remember
fishing
the equation,
what?
But it was fishing distance, how far away you can actually manage a fly from, and that there's some equation I remember, it's like 6 inches of rod length equates to another 3 feet away from you that you can get.
Yeah.
Do you know the equation?
I was really bad at school. I was too busy fishing. But yeah, I mean, basically from a fishing perspective, for me, the longer the rod, the better the control, the distance. Mm-hmm. That is not always the best thing. You know, for trout, yes. For grayling, no. So when we grayling fish, we fish shorter rods.
I didn't know that the coarse fish were. I knew grayling were, but I thought y'all considered them coarse fish too.
No, we consider them the salmonids, so we consider them.
Okay.
We consider them a game fish.
But I didn't know that the other ones rolled in that.
Yeah, not everywhere. So some venues have a lot of coarse fish like chub, perch, roach, and they count them. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they don't. You know, it depends on the venue and the rules and all that kind of stuff. But when we're grayling fish, quite often you're a lot better fishing a shorter rod because grayling are really tolerant and they don't spook. And quite a lot of them quite like to be close to where you're standing. So they'll swim around you. If you're fishing a long rod, you're out there and quite often you're pulling them in, mm-hmm. you know. So sometimes for shorter rods for grayling.
So you're getting better drifts close to you with the shorter rod. Yeah.
And you get a shorter, you know, your frequency of cast is increased because you're not, with a longer rod, you're throwing longer and you're getting a much longer track of fly. Shorter rod, you're throwing short and getting a much shorter mm-hmm. drift. So you're getting more, especially when you're searching for fish. It can be important sometimes.
On this river, I always tell people it's 10 foot wide because long casts aren't doing you much here. I mean, it's just, you can't control it, right?
Yeah, especially not with a fly line.
Right. But even with, I mean, if it's out 10 feet, you could have waves that big between you and that.
You could have four different currents between you and that, too.
And then, and you're not holding fish out there either. Again, reading the water. But I still like a 10-foot rod here when I'm nymphing.
Yeah, it's a good choice.
It's right between. And because I mean, 70% of our fish come 3 feet from shore. And most people walk through them. And
people just don't believe that.
No, they don't.
They don't believe it at all.
They just don't believe it. But we've got so many, but you can step out 6 feet and have a seam that has 20 fish in it.
Yeah.
You know, and just sit there all day going, womp, womp, womp.
Definitely, yeah.
But, and, you know, that was one of the, when Euro first showed up here and we would go out and, you know, I was always drop shotting and have these just ridiculous number days, right? And guys come back, oh, you're so full of shit. And then the Eurocat showed up. Same guys that said we were full of shit, that we weren't catching the fish. Now they're in here and they're arrowing it and they're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know? And some of them have even confessed, you know, sorry, dude. They really were there. Thought you were full of shit. But most of those guys, when you used to watch them, they'd be throwing those things out there on a floating line.
Yeah.
Whew, good luck.
No chance.
Hopefully for you, an automatic and it just swims away from you. But yeah, yeah, the water reading, I just, on your competition thing, when I was, I'd like to delve in that deeper because it just, you know, the angles, the reading, the what, I mean, something's making somebody that good.
Yeah.
I mean, no offense, but part of your greatness is your fucking casting's nobody. I've been with everybody. That's really huge, right? It's got to be a big advantage.
It does help.
Yeah. But those guys are probably really close.
Right? I'll be good.
Yeah. And so as good, maybe right there. And I've said that all my life, but you know, I know lots of guys better at me at certain disciplines, this one, that one, or whatever. But and I never really could figure that out either. I mean, it's just like same drift, same this, and just sometimes it's just that cat that's just really same boat,
yeah,
same cast, same distance from shore. Why'd they like this? He smelt. I have a buddy, the guy that carved me this, his name is Bill. That's his Bill Robinson. Billy Hood. Billy has more absolute monster white tails. And we used to hunt three of us together. And we would switch blinds because Billy felt sorry for us. We'd go to the other blind and he'd rack this giant out from under you, right? And I said, the only thing I could come up with is that son of a bitch smells different. I think he smells like, I think you smell like doe piss. But he's a total badass. He was a great karate guy. I mean, however he's a karate guy, but Billy was a... But it was just like, he's 14 and he shoots like a 170 on his first buck. And...
There's just those guys out there, though, isn't there?
Yeah, and I mean, he's super, but I mean, we all sat in our blinds and we're just we're sitting up there in the trees and hanging out, and Billy comes home every time. I don't know if we always thought, well, he can't be quieter, because nobody's making it, now we're just like freezing, right? And it's like, something's different. You walk into his trophy room and it's like walking into Erdman's. It's like, as far as you can see, holy shit. And it's like...
Erdman's got a kill chamber down there.
Oh, my God.
Insane.
Billy's, I think, in the whitetail world's equal.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's like, just one of those cats. Everything just...
So, I guess the question here is, I feel like we all know different people in the fish world that seem like they just have luck on their side. I know one of our guy who used to work for us, Charlie Powell. You know, he'd put in less days than other people. Like, not saying when he was out here he didn't fish a lot, but he'll come visit for a weekend and seemingly just catch, he'll get into this big fish. And there's nothing discernible that's different. And I know, you know, a lot of people have kind of ran into this. Some people just seem to have good luck, and generally it comes down to something. But how much do you think luck plays a factor in these world championships?
Oh, there's a part of it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure getting
like
beats,
you said,
right?
The draw of that river. Yeah.
The draw is like, I mean, I was in a medal position going, you know, close to a medal position. I was within range of a medal going into the fourth session, and the draw completely screwed me.
Yeah.
And you can be the best angler in the world, but if you don't have a workable draw and a workable rotation, you are not going to medal.
Yeah.
That's a fact. Some guys do seem to sometimes roll the draw just that little bit better. But equally, you can roll the best draw. If you can't get it done, you can't get it done. And you end up placing 50th.
Yeah.
So you've got to have the best angler and still have a workable draw. And, you know, I've been in that position. I've been 4th, 10th, 11th, you know. And on those occasions, I could have won. I could have been world champion again.
Mm-hmm.
But the draw just didn't quite fall in whatever reason, be it the beat, the conditions flipped, you know, and then settled down the day after. So there is an element of chance, and you can't do anything about that.
You got a guy that just backs three in a row? It ain't luck.
No.
It ain't luck.
He is...
It's something. You know? He smells different.
Yeah.
He smells like...
Yeah.
Doe piss, like Billy. 14 I swear they just go to him, right? They just walk over to see why he smells the way he does. Yeah. Maybe his waders smell different than yours.
Yeah. It doesn't shower, who knows?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So how does the draw work?
So
how many beats are there? How many rivers do you fish or whatever?
So it depends. So every year it's different. So the minimum requirement is there has to be at least, so you fish five sessions,
mm-hmm.
and it can be four rivers, one lake. It can be, you know, two lakes, three rivers, but there always has to be a mix. It can't be like five rivers or five lakes. There has to be a combination. And there's five people in a team, five venues. We all get drawn into different groups. You stay with your group for the entire week. So you stay with your group for the entire week. You rotate through the beats, you know. And
how big's a beat? I know they vary, but
it varies.
Roughly.
Minimum's like 125, it's 200 meters. Is the minimum allowable beat on a river, it's 200 meters.
And that's X time?
3 hours.
Copy.
You've got to work it in 3 hours. And yeah, you rotate through those beats, and there is a filter applied to the draw that pushes anglers from the same team away from each other. So if I draw beat 10, nobody in my team can draw 9, 10, or 11.
Got it.
We've got to be separated. Where it gets a little bit weird sometimes is like in this last one, the Otava was one of the river sectors that was really uneven. And we managed to draw like four of us down the bottom end when all the good fishing was at the top. And we're like, you know.
Right.
It's chance.
And people might think that's petty, but if you do, it's you're ignorant to rivers, because this river is 50 miles, called the 50-mile riffle, right? And I don't care what guide it is who thinks what there will be sections on fire every section, and it changes daily.
Yeah.
And you might have a week, say, of the flats are just on fire, right? And this is just so-so, you know, but it changes. And I mean, could be just bug activity. Bugs start low and come up. So imagine drawing here and all the bugs are down in the flats and you're up here and we're still stunned waiting for, you know, a caddis to show up.
Salmon flies are a perfect example of that, right? They move up
all bugs
pretty predictably.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're in the bottom of the river trying to fish sand flies when they're up here in the wade section, you're probably not going to see a fish.
Yeah, one of the world's biggest questions, why do they start eating? You know, why do they do that? And barometric pressure. And I have always kind of been under just basic B there, that bug activity is a huge stimulus for fish to start and continue to eat, right?
100%.
So you're down here, and they're up here, you know, say, and forgo the salmon fly, but just like a PMD thing. And suddenly there's 100,000 PMDs, you know, moving. It doesn't matter if they're on the surface, but they're moving, they're swimming, they're out. That stimulus, those trout can feel those fish, those bugs moving.
100%.
And so it jacks them up. And up here, nothing's happening that day. And it's like, well, why can't I catch? All you're catching is whitefish.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, well, there's no stimulus, and it's and that's a luck of the draw, completely. Totally. I mean, otherwise our guides wouldn't, you know, when the river's on, every freaking one of them's in the same stretch, right? Yeah. Because it doesn't matter if I don't want to be around the boats. Well, if you want to be around the fish, they're there. Of course, there's some arrogant piece of shit out there going, yeah, well, if I can do it anywhere, great, come to work for me.
Show me.
I would love to have you
replicate it.
I would love to have you on my staff, but it's, and you know, and why, what's the number one thing that people walk in here and say, first thing they say, where are they biting?
Yeah.
Where are they biting? Right? And it's like, and then second is, what are they biting? Really ought to know that before you get here. But that's okay. That's our job, right? But it is our number one question.
Yeah.
Where are they biting?
Where should I go fish?
And it really, in reality, it's probably the most pertinent thing you should ask.
Yeah.
Because if all the salmon flies are down there and that's what you're here for, and you got seven more days before there's going to be one crawl across this bottom.
Yeah.
It's pertinent. If you're the one that draws that lower four beats where there's not shit, you're pissing in the wind.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I always, because we're fishing behind each other over the course of the competition. Mm-hmm. So you can go into beats which have been fished three times by three really good anglers. You get on the fourth or the fifth day. And for me, if I get to that beat, irrespective of what's happened previous, if I see bugs and the conditions have changed, I just forget about all that because it's like the slate's getting wiped clean. It doesn't matter how many times they've been pricked or caught or whatever. If you start to get that flush of fly, they've got to eat, their instinct kicks in and they start to feed.
Yeah.
So for me, that's like a clear all, if you like. When you see that bug activity, I forget about what's happened. It doesn't matter if the guy before me's caught one fish or nothing. If there's fly, I sort of relax and think, right, here we go. This could be good, you know. And in theory, over the course of the competition, you know, we all get different draws. We get good draws, bad draws. But the theory of it is, over those 5 days and five men, the draw equalises. So the best, most consistent team on average wins. Mm-hmm. That's the theory of it.
I mean, probably as good as you could get.
Yeah.
Because, can't predict pushes, water pushes. No. You can't predict fronts and stuff like that. So what the hell, you got to have something.
I'm not a statistician, but if you are, I'm curious what the law of large numbers dictates the minimum number of iterations is to kind of rid yourself of the...
That's a lot of big words.
Sorry.
You just lost me completely.
But I liked it. It sounded good.
Jake?
Jake's
got it. 30. Jake's over there.
Jake's too clever. He should be iterations.
Billy, my buddy I just talked about, the badass.
Yeah.
He's just a great fighter. Unbelievable. He's the guy I told you had such a great high kick.
Yeah.
I hated it. But he said that you seemed pretty smart and kept me on track.
You said that about me?
Yeah, I said, God, I wouldn't have thought you'd have said
that. Did he have the volume on?
That's what I asked him. I said, man.
No,
but I did like that. It was impressive.
Thank you. Sorry.
It reminded me of Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
I'm the guy, the dark haired guy.
Yeah. Me and him very similar.
And you're Will.
Yeah, it's funny. There was a math problem up on the chalkboard in the back of the slide in, and that's what I solved my first day.
Yeah.
Although I did show up and
four plus three.
I used Excel, and that was like a mind-blowing thing. I remember when Matt showed Johnny how to do something with the flies on Excel, and Johnny.
No, on the inventory.
That's what
took
it was
3 weeks off.
Yeah.
Dumbass.
Johnny closed the computer.
Stupid son of a bitch should have walked up to me and say, I want a $10,000 bonus. He took three people's 3 weeks of their jobs away.
Yep.
Right? Because it took that. I mean, Carrie got like $1 million worth of flies. You got to count to some bitches. Well, and we thought we were like super cool when we went to the grain scales and started playing Cocaine Days. Right? And we're just pouring them in there.
That's what we used to do.
Yeah. Whatever he came up with. And Johnny just flipped. Johnny ain't stupid. Johnny's a very educated man.
Very smart.
And he's just, he was dumbfounded. He was, the look on his face when he went, oh God, 3 weeks inventory. I mean, the fly thing, because we can't just do all those. There's 10 times as many in the back.
Yeah.
And you're going through them, and Matt came up with this equation, and it was like, wow, Matt should have demanded a $10,000 bonus.
Immediately.
Too late now, dumbass. Yeah. With the cat's out of the bag.
I still remember my first winter doing inventory in here, and we had two scales, and everybody else was using them. I think.
Did you have to count?
Chris and Matt. Yeah, I counted all of our traditional flies by hand.
Yeah.
And I was like, there can't be that many of them. Mickey Finn's a pretty low-profile bug in that bin.
Yeah.
I never in my life counted to 1,000. And I did it a lot that day. And I just remember I laid down on the ground. My back was giving me problems. I got disc issues. And I just lay down on the ground like this. And Johnny walks up and goes, first year doing inventory, huh? I got a back problem, dude.
Freaking neck thing. I used to do that alone. But I had all winter, so it didn't matter.
Oh, my Lord.
Can I do the walk-off thing? Need the bathroom.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Too many silver bullets.
Yeah, a couple. Them.
I had a giant jug of coffee before I...
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Tired.
No idea.
Oh, that's, we're on it. We were done.
What were we talking about?
I don't know, but we were done with whatever he said, and then he paused over the...
Okay, well, I hope that was a really natural ending point, and this will be a natural pickup. Thomas Holtman, 5324, said, I'd be interested in how HC fishes the Madison. When he retires from competition, will he continue to contact nymph with super long level tippet leaders? Or did he modify his nymph game? What can mortals take from the comp game and put into their own game? So that's three questions, and he misspelled thanks, but great question.
Well, I'm definitely
more. Spell it?
It's not that bad. Is that
the way THSNKS.
Oh. Yeah. Why do you got to call people out like that?
Because, I don't know, it makes me feel big.
It's like that whole tight lines thing. What's that about?
Which one?
Tight lines.
Do you see how many people call me back that they hate tight lines too?
Everybody hates it, but you don't want to call it out.
Well, I called it out. Don't say tight lines. It's fucking cheesy. Cheese dick.
So what did we, what was the first question?
Fishing the Madison, I think.
Yeah. How do you fish the Madison? Yeah.
So I love this.
Very well.
Yeah, well.
For those of you that weren't with us.
Well, and not that often, but yeah. Well.
I love this.
I fish it quite a lot. Fish a lot more than I do.
I fished it for a bit.
Like, he's been up there a lot.
Yeah. All right. Well.
It's, I mean, for the nymph game, it's second to none, really. You know. It's I do nymph fish it a lot when I fish, but I also, a lot of times I like to fish sculpins and stuff on the point on a nymph leader and control them in the pockets and stuff, because it just sets up so well for that. I usually fish a betis or a midge above it as a flyer, and personally I like to target
as a flyer. It's a different term than I think anybody knows what it means.
Yeah, just basically fluttering on the top dropper, so a lot less weight than I need than you would need normally. I'm relying on the weight on the point to control it. So I'll fish like those tungsten helmets, the sculpin helmets, on the point, or a bait fish with a tungsten head on it.
What would you call that, an emerger?
Talking about like Mauser heads or fishing.
Yeah, for the point.
Sculpin then. Heads.
No, that's the point, but the flyer.
Yeah, the dropper, I'll fish a betis or a midge.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
what would you call that?
Your tag fly, whatever your upper fly is.
Right.
Yeah.
I've never heard the term flyer before. I knew what it was, but I didn't know if anybody else would, because he's already got his point fly on there. So.
Yeah. No, it's just because I like to think of it as something that's lighter and it's
fluttery.
It's fluttering around. And I like to target the middle, I'll be honest, because most people don't. And typically I find a lot of fish out there. And then when it comes to when I stop competition fishing, I'll still do it. I'll still do all the Euro light line stuff. But I enjoy everything.
I was just going to say that. Because every day I deal with this, how's streamer fishing? I couldn't tell you. I don't fish any of my dry flies in July. If I had to just streamer fish, I would quit.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it. You know, you don't have to. I've always felt that way about the opposite side. We shouldn't. No, I'm just kidding, baby. But just to do. I mean, when I started that streamer thing, I just did that.
A little backstory, by the way, Mel and Kelly oftentimes watch the podcast together.
Yeah, I know. It works out so good.
Directly to her.
Sorry, baby. Yeah. What was that one? Oh, my God.
Oh, it was the giant fish.
It was the female.
Yeah, they're always post-spawn females. When they quit spawning and all they do is eat. Yeah.
And I got the exorcist head. It's like, what? But, you know, the whole... I get asked this a lot, you know, about last day of fishing, and I tell them I want to fish braid with a frog and lily pads, and they're like, "Ah, you're the Antichrist." Ah. But the thing that, and it was kind of a bait, which Sean Fiekel took it like that, about the Euro thing, but it was a little bit tongue. But to think that, first of all, you or any other super, and I've called out every single guy in the U.S., like Lance and George, everybody knows those guys are great at everything. You're not going to be a single, nobody can be a one-trick pony. But to ask any, I don't think there's a person on earth, unless they said dry flies, if you just said, I just want to finish my life out fishing upstream to rising trout or whatever, I get that. But yeah, to think that anybody would do, to get to your level and just did one thing, like, are you just going to Euro? Well, you know, we talked about that before. Like, at some point, you just get want to do something different.
Yeah.
You know?
100%.
Didn't mean anything about that, Mel. I didn't. It was strictly fly fishing. I mean, to think that anybody would do one, especially when you figure that you didn't start there. Now, the kids that started Euro Nymphing, and that's what they did, maybe that's what they would, but... What would you, if you had one style, like you say, okay, it doesn't matter, that's not the only one you got to do, but you want to go out and do, what was your, just like if it was like optimum, we got 45 minutes, it's hard, we want to go out, what do you want, and here's what we got.
You know, so like a favorite method, just
yeah, just throwing. Yeah, but just you, just go out, and not forever, not, just, and I'll just lead it. I
like sight fishing.
That's what I do. That's a July. July is sight. Like this week's game, because every week has a different set of rules in July. I get three fish up, and it doesn't have to be upstream. It just has to have a head up. And I get three fish. And so I got to select them, right? And I'm out there, and I'm like, that's not a good fish. That's in a hard spot. I'll try that one, right? But it's dry fly.
Yeah.
And it's an hour. Right, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. I mean, the best eat I've had all year is on the Henry's Fork 2 mornings ago. There was a fish right inside nymphing, backward forward, really heavily nymphing, and I threw a spinner at it, and second drift, it had never risen, it was just nymphing,
right.
And second drift, he broke off the bottom, turned around, followed downstream and ate it.
Sweet.
And for me, that was like,
especially down there, yeah,
that thing's like. Because especially the way it ate it, because it was like, that's real.
Yeah.
And that pushes all the buttons.
All the buttons. That's what I like about ant fishing. When they get a good ant eat, it means it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's explosive. It just goes, it's that deliberation where it just says, that's real.
Yeah. I want that's that. It. I'm going to go downstream.
And it's real. Yeah. And it's like, and that's the whole game. The whole, you faked him out, right? Yeah. And he says, yeah.
Because sometimes that eat isn't, it's not convinced.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes that eat's not the same as all the eats when it's taken the real thing.
When it's really slappy
and it's
or
like,
quick.
It's gone, it's, but sometimes when they eat it, they eat it the same
that's
as the real
the
thing.
That's the basis of my Cripples and Spinners book that happened. That's what the whole thing was, is that I think it was seven, I got seven fish in a row and they ate it better than the real thing.
Yeah.
And it was like, come on. And I'm like, and I finally, because one of my real mentor, Dave Ellis, is the greatest dry guy I've ever seen. He was very astute at noticing those things. And I saw him with his head underwater watching flies one day, and I was just watching him. But I was watching that, and I started thinking about, why would they change cadence? Why would the flies, why would the fish suddenly just go, come on, when he was going? You know, and then on the seventh one, I realized. At first, I thought my ego was like, really wasn't my ego because I was fishing Dave's triple wing spin, and it just wasn't. They were making it right at the end, right? And they were refusing it. But I'm on that night where luck did play.
Yeah.
They just it was the last second, but I got them.
Yeah,
I didn't get a fish over 16 inches. I'm not talking like giant fish here, but I realized something's wrong. That they just don't. That was first you're like, ooh, I'm Howard. And then you're like, no, I'm just really lucky. And so the entire premise of that book, the first chapters, we're just talking about that, where it's just something wasn't right. But when you get that like yours, where it went, and that total conviction and just closes its mouth and you watch that whole thing, I can go home.
Yeah.
I can go like, okay, I don't need much more than that.
I caught two fish in 2 days in the mornings.
Perfect.
We just did 2 hours.
Perfect.
I got one the first day, sight nymphing. fishing with Todd from Trout Hunter, Todd Lanning, great guy.
Sure.
Sign in from the first day, spin up the second, and that was my day, mate.
You don't have to have it. That's why I only get three fish a night.
Yeah.
So I make sure I get them in a place, in I get a rise for them, the type, you know, I want the head going a certain direction, whatever. I don't want them boiling and running around, chasing caddis emergers and shit. I want to, like that,
yeah.
Right? And so I get three fish, so I make them count.
Yeah.
Some nights it really sucks to say, ooh, wish I... You get the wrong fish? Oh, shit, that's number three. 8 inches. Hmm. Right beside a 20.
Tough luck.
Yeah. What was the end of that next one? That was a three-parter, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, actually.
Well, I also don't want to give anything away, but Howard went into a shop, and the guy was explaining how to fish to Howard. That he catches only giant fish. He implied that Howard doesn't know how to fish.
Poor guy. What was the stat that he did? Like some stupid ass shit that you couldn't do if you're fishing.
What did he say?
Oh God.
We're not mentioning where it was.
No. He asked me if we'd been catching many fish down the ranch, and I said, "Oh, you know, we've caught some fish." And he said,
"Let me just interrupt for a second because I know I just constantly. I have told people for 30 years, when you say." I got a fish on the ranch, you had a great day.
Yeah.
When you say, I got fish, meaning plural, you are somebody. And I don't give a shit who it is, right? So to this guy, sorry to interrupt, but that's been kind of the thing for, you don't go to the ranch. You go to the ranch for what you said was your best day.
Yeah.
That one positive E.
Yeah.
And that's A game.
Yeah.
Right? Excuse me.
So we basically said, yeah, we caught fish. It was great. And he said, so I had, well, how big were they? So I had a picture on my phone, I showed him. And he went, yeah, you know, you're spooking the big ones. They can see you coming. One of our guys goes down there and everything he catches, everything, is 26 to 32 inches. 32 inches. I don't fish the Henry's Fork a lot. I fished it a good few times, but...
Yeah, I just hope he doesn't tell Mike Lawson or Renee Harrop, the guys that have been there for 40 years.
It was insane.
It might really break their hearts.
Do you think either of them have ever got a 30 in there?
No.
No, I don't.
Not even back
when they were playing. Do you think a 30 is in that river?
Yeah, I'm sure there are, but not even.
Not,
back when they were, they weren't telling people that they were planting it, and they were escapees out of the ponds and stuff, there were still 30.
It's a huge fish.
Yeah, that's the white buffalo.
Go look at the slide in the Instagram.
But they were all that big.
Yes, probably. That's my point.
Yeah,
First of all, to say you got a 26 in that river, to land one, think about that. Weed beds, light tippet, sight fishing.
I asked Todd when we came, I said, what's the biggest fish you've had? He said, 24. I've had a 24. I can remember it.
Let's clarify one thing. 24 is fucking huge.
It's massive.
Yeah, it's a huge fish.
It's a huge fish. People say, I saw one time.
And he lives
saying,
there. Huh? You know, and he lives there. He's there all the time. So,
Todd?
Yeah.
And he lived down, and he was the manager of the South Fork Lodge forever. And you could ask them down there. 2 foot is giant. I remember when people talked about 20s like the white whale. It's like, holy shit, I got a 20. Right? Now it's like, so, yeah, I got 6 20s this morning. Yeah.
No,
you didn't.
We've totally taken away the validity of a 20-inch fish.
Yeah.
And people start talking. That's why we were going to make this T-shirt forever. Like 10 years ago, we were going to start it. 17, the new 23. You know, because when this shit started, whoever started this, you should, I mean... That thing and closing in your little fingers and shit. That's, it's like, to stop it, right? It's just bullshit. It's like standing behind a freaking 140 whitetail, you know, 10 feet and saying it's a 180. You see these guys doing these
10 feet in front of your girlfriend. Yeah, she looks like she's about the right size.
He said that. I didn't say that.
Sorry, Mel.
Sorry, Mel. Mel's a treadmill mama right now. She's getting ready to climb a mountain or something. I don't know what the hell she's doing.
Yeah, well, that's
so. Third part
of that was the third part of that was what can mortals take from the comp game and put into their own game? Yeah. And I think that this is a very valuable question, because there's so many people that are in that, whatever, call it the bottom 50% of anglers, or 50% of anglers. And
Angulars was cooler.
Angulars, yeah. With a spit bubble in the back of my throat, too. When you get up to these higher levels, like anything, it's harder and harder to level up as you get more advanced, right? Like to get from level 7 to level 8 is way harder than getting from 6 to 7, right?
Yeah.
And when you're at your level, it might be hard to figure out what somebody who's way below you might be able to add.
The single biggest mistake I see people make is not taking notice of the clues. Everything's there that you need to know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people just, they're too busy fishing to think about what they should be doing. It's they're too quick to, let's strap this on because, I heard this is a good fly, or this is a good method.
And the magic fly.
Just wade into the river and they just start throwing it in there without actually just sitting there and thinking, looking around and saying, hang on a minute, it's cloud cover, there's a few bugs, I'll look into the edges in this sort of like nice paced water where the flies are getting pushed into, and all those guys are out there crashing around in the middle, I'm going to go right up the inside, or everybody's stomping the inside, I'm going to look to the middle where maybe it's not had as much pressure.
I think that's
the clues are there.
I think that's a clue that we've never talked about, is wind direction and what that does to bugs. And it's something we do when we're out there, but I don't think we've ever talked about it on the podcast in terms of, if you've got a west wind, heavy wind out of the west, if you're fishing hoppers, it almost doesn't matter what bug you're fishing. You might want to go to the east side because everything's getting pushed over there, right?
Yeah. For sure, on lakes, that's a huge influence.
It is on the river as well. I've dug myself out of tough situations in river competitions when I've gone to back eddies where there's remnants of fly getting pushed, and it's kept enough fish on the surface for me to win a session or win an event or whatever it is, where the rest of the river shut down.
So basically you're just saying observation.
Yeah.
You're just, and I was listening to you, and every time I listen to you talk and I'm thinking about it, think about just being on the river, right? Just guiding or just fishing. You and I are fishing down the river, whatever. And you see people so clueless, right? And I watched you this morning going into Bozeman, and I went over the Gallatin. Really fast section just above the bridge, and I just see this guy just as far as he can out, straight up the river, and just totally hoping.
Yeah.
Throw as far as you can out, and reading water. I think the reading water is huge. Like you were talking about earlier, but I think the thing that helped me teach people more than anything was guiding, and just watching. To see absolutely how all water is the same to a new angler.
Yeah.
It's all water. Get a Howard fly or a Kelly fly and throw it out there because they're going to eat that.
Yeah.
Right? And all water's the same, all flies are the same, and cast far. I'm really anti-long cast, right? Not because I don't like it, because I watch so many people, they equate the cast to the fishing. If it's long, they're going to catch more out there, right? And they just don't break that water down. Excuse me, especially here on this, like we said, the inside. I tell people 10 foot, the rest is scenic value. Just look out there, fish your inside 10. But most people, I'm kind of interjecting for Howard here, but I know he's going to say the same thing. They don't. You're analyzing lots of stuff all around you, right? More than the average mortal's going to do. And it's just coming into you quickly. And it's coming, boom, 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 boom. Okay, west wind, got to get the east side. You've got to get to where the bug. It's the concentration things, right? And most people just see that river as one big shiny thing.
Yeah.
And they don't take the time to just, you said it, slow down and look. Right? And they just move. Everything's like, I see it with young streamer guys. They go down the river and they just hit everything, man. They're just like spastic. Everything's got, fast as shit, right? It's like, but how are you analyzing it? What are you doing? Is everything the same? And they don't really, because they got a big fly in.
Yeah, they're working a grid pattern, but they're not modifying the grid for where they actually think fish might be.
Yeah, and that's the only thing. The only reason you go to those eddies is because you've already quantified the fact that they're there. So you've already broke that down. Yeah. You've broke it down that they should be there, and then you go there. But most people just fish all of this giant thing.
So what do you think some of those, I guess, the most important variables are when you get to a river and you're like, this guy's asking, right? What can the average mortal add to their game?
Let me interject something in that. If you went to your beat, let's make it small.
Yeah.
If you went to your beat and you got 200 meters, well, how many is that in yards? Yeah.
160.
Thank you. I don't do conversion.
Me neither.
I've got a computer in front of me.
So, okay, 160 yards.
Yeah.
Football field and a half. You've got to fish for 3 hours.
Yeah.
What does Howard go? Do you go broad and look? Do you, like, run it and up and down and go, or do you just take it as it comes to you? Or do you just start breaking?
I was off. It's 220, 218 meters. So.
Backwards.
Huh? Yeah, my bad.
So I walk it. We usually get about 30 minutes max. So I walk.
Oh, you get a beat walk?
We get 30 minutes. Minimum is 30 minutes for a load.
Right.
So you can sometimes get 2 hours. It depends on the logistics of getting everybody, because you've got to get 32 people to 32 beats, you know, up and down a river, which is a logistical challenge.
Right.
So some of us arrive there with 2 hours to spare. Some of us arrive there with a minimum of 30 minutes. But you have enough time to set your gear and analyze what you've got to play with. So for me, I look for food production zones. Where's the bugs going to come? Are they actually coming or not? What's the water temperature? And I break it down into A, B, and C water. Where's my first shot? You know, is that the approach? And what I tend to try and do is, you know, if I've got a good beat which is all air water, I work out then a strategy to maximize it over 3 hours.
What water?
Air water. So like
air?
A. Capital A.
A.
Yeah. So
I thought you were saying aerated. That's like
my
bubbly.
It's my funny accent. So we go like A, B, and C.
Right.
You know, A being the best. Okay. You know, C still being okay. And work out a strategy for what you're going to do with your 3 hours. You know. But a lot of mine is driven off, you know, reading the conditions, the temperature, the bugs, you know. And when we've done the practice, which we can't practice the actual venue, we practice similar venues in the area, you know, take in that information and work out a plan from that. Mm-hmm. And I apply that to all of my pleasure fishing as well. You know, I mean, when I went down, when I was at Reynolds this morning, late this afternoon, the river was full of guys fishing. There was people everywhere. And they were all stood in the edge, fishing the edge, pretty much. You know, there was a few guys blasting it out there and swinging it and doing weird stuff. And there was no bugs, so all I did was go to the middle. I waded about a third of the way out and I hit the pockets behind the big rocks in the middle. And, you know,
everyone
found some willing fish.
Lots, yeah. You
know. But, so it almost sounds like reading water is an afterthought for you. I mean, I'm sure it's a language you're pretty well versed in.
It's not an afterthought. It's, you know, I'm reading the conditions and I'm reading the water at the same time.
But it's a muscle that's very well used for you.
Yeah.
It probably isn't for our mere mortals.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I think makes the difference for me when I fish that gets me sometimes better results behind people is I like to try and look through the water and look at places that people might have missed. You know, a good friend of mine, Eduardo Dona, he's an Italian angler, really good angler. He's been Masters World Champion. He always said to me, if you look and you think there's a fish there, there probably is. You know, if you think it's a good place for a fish, there most likely is a fish there. And you might not catch it first drift, but if you get the fly to get into it in the right way, you will get it to eat. And I always try to, particularly when the fishing gets really hard and I'm following a lot of good anglers, I look for those kind of places where a fish might just tuck out of the way and try and get the fly to it.
On that note, for new anglers, one thing, I mean, databasing, all fly fishing is memory, or any fishing, is memory. So databasing, like you said, the reason you looked and you thought there was fish there is because sometime in your life you caught a fish there.
Yeah.
Where then you have to have already analyzed your water to say, it was in this kind of water. Why? Well, you know, it's pushing the hydraulics coming around, it's feeding the fish to this side of that rock. Like when you did that one up there, yeah. Prick. Slid that thing twice, perfect. And it's like there's a perfect seam and there's a pretty good seam coming around every hydraulic, right? They're going to have different contours to the hydraulics, but the fish will have a comfort zone on one better than the other. So, but you caught a fish there one day and you said, and you hardly ever see people come back and just look, like, look at that water. Oh. And then so your buddy and you, and that's what he's saying, the muscle well used, where you have looked at hundreds of thousands of these places and database the fact that it should be there. And then you come back and like the guy says, if you think it, well, that's because you know it, really. It yeah. should be there. Whether he is or not, he will be. Water, yes. They go to the same type. That was kind of the premise of my book on streamers about on the inside, they go to a same type. They don't necessarily go to the same mailbox, but they go to the same neighborhood,
yeah.
right? They're in the same type of water. It doesn't matter if it's a 28-inch brown trout or if it's a 12-inch rainbow. They go to the same.
It doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what river, doesn't matter what continent, doesn't matter anything. They are working hydraulics of the water, and the more you databased it. Some people do that really quickly, really young. They get it, they understand it, and they see how it works. Creek fishermen, I think, when you grew up fishing little stuff when you were a kid, and you did the same thing, yeah. sure. And you kind of stand and look at them.
Yeah.
You get to watch a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
Some people just see the fish, or they see the river. You see the current. You see the motion. You see the push. And then you database that, and then, like your buddy said, the master's guy.
Yeah.
If you think it, it's there. And then repetitive, you know, might not be that one, but it might be that one.
Yeah,
that
dollar. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can fish the perfect fly in front of no fish over and over and over again. You'll never get one.
Presentation.
But if you,
and you can put the perfect fly poorly in front of a fish and not eat.
Yeah. Or you can put an imperfect fly in front of a fish and catch a fish.
Mm-hmm.
You better be putting it in front of a fish.
I mean, I can tell you those French guys fish pheasant tails all the time.
Yeah.
It's a pheasant tail. That's it. Yeah. A simple fly.
I mean, I cringe at all the water I used to fish on the Yakima River, like, thinking, and I remember saying to people, like, oh, they've got to be here, right? And I'm fishing boily outsides coming off big rocks, and every once in a while we get one nymphing, but it's just a stupid teenager, right?
I truly, which is not good for Kelly to say, because Kelly makes a living off of flies, but one of my biggest hardships in our, because of Euro nymphing, is the fact that I think we've lost a 10-year generation of anglers that know what a pheasant tail and a hare's ear, or God help you if you showed them a lead-wing coachman. What the hell is that? And we've lost that era of angler. They'll come back. Everybody goes circle. Nothing. You didn't kill world fishing, and I didn't kill here. It'll come back. They'll want to learn it over, but a pheasant tail, I used to sell, I don't know, 1,000 dozen a season. If I sell 50 this year, I'll be amazed.
Yeah.
And the hare's ear, I hear it constantly. Where's the bead? It's like, dang. Yeah. Oh, well, let me explain this to you. You know, but it's not the fly. It is to a degree. But if the French guys are pretty goddamn good.
Yeah, you know, they're above average.
Yeah. And if you're telling everybody, they're fishing a damn a pheasant tail, right? Yeah. And there's a reason.
Yeah.
Because it's in the right spot, at the right speed, and where it should be, and they eat it. Because it looks like a freaking mayfly.
Yeah, it's real.
Right? It's real.
It's food. Yeah.
But they also eat the fucking pretty damn good. It is. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. Oh, Jake's going in for a beer.
I think everybody needs one, yeah.
I think you're right. I'm about ready.
Spraying the infield.
All right, I think we're... I think this has been a long podcast. It kind of got...
Who cares?
Kind of got...
I got one more question.
All right, we
more
got one
questions
more.
For...
We'll keep it going. This is a long, lucky episode
for
all of you.
He can edit it. What in genre...
No, I won't.
Style of fly. What is your favorite fly? Doesn't have to be because it catches fish. What's your favorite steelhead fly?
Steelhead fly.
Or salmon.
So that is one thing I don't do a lot of is steelhead and salmon.
Doesn't have to mean you fish it. Doesn't mean you have to catch fish in.
I've done a little bit.
What's your favorite wet fly?
Favorite wet fly?
Wet fly. Traditional wet fly. Most people don't even know what a traditional wet fly is anymore. Yeah.
It's most probably for me a water hen blower. That is probably my favourite. Because I have a... My uncle taught me how to fish them when I was a kid. And sadly he's not with us anymore, but he taught me how to spider wet fly fish. Three spiders, partridge and orange, water hen blower, sniper and purple. And the water hen blower is the one I had most success on because it's a good imitation of a large dark olive, which is a spring catch we get, northern rivers. And I love fishing that thing in the spring.
Traditional mayfly.
Your favorite traditional mayfly pattern?
First off, how big of an influence was Oliver Edwards to you?
Big.
You got to fish with Oliver, didn't you?
I fished with Oliver a good few times.
For those of you who don't know, that would be like Kelly saying that he got to fish with Joe Brooks, which he didn't. Oliver Edwards, who is your favorite fly designer?
Oliver.
In the world of... Out of Oliver Edwards was mine too. Not in, in certain genres, in particular the mayflies, but...
Oliver was the real deal.
And yeah, he was frightening. I only got to meet him once.
He was brutally honest. He's a Yorkshireman. He was so direct.
Does a Yorkshireman mean something that's like what?
Yeah.
Being from Jersey or
it's
something?
It's fly. You know, this is the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and he would tell you. Yeah. He would tell you, and there would be no you. There was no grey area with Oliver.
Oh, I met him once.
Yeah. And he was, you know, a big hero of mine, and you know his flies were very, very complex, and my flies, by comparison, now that I fish, are very simple. Mm-hmm. But I went through that whole thing with him and I tied all of his patterns and, you know, some of his techniques and stuff were revolutionary.
I
mean,
I don't know if a lot of the Americans know as much about Oliver. I knew Ray Schmidt, he had Oliver there at his tying thing. I told you that before. But then I subscribed to Fly Fisherman Tire out of England because of it.
Yeah.
And that's when I got to really see his CDC stuff and all of his, it was like, wow. And we weren't even dealing with it then.
Yeah.
The US wasn't dealing with it. Okay.
I mean, so, he tied those like those heptagene, those flat stone clinging nymphs. Those things are like a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And as a piece of fly design, you know, when you fish early season, when we fish like to a merch brown hatch, you know, that's a flat stone clinger type bug, as you know. And he was probably the first one who came up with that big triangular headed profile with the legs cranked and the three split tails, and that thing looks real in the water.
Yeah.
And they do key in on that profile of fly. And yeah.
There's certain, especially your clingers, that when they get dislodged, they get like a boner.
Yeah, they do. They go all
and they're like they're like a lot of times people say, well, that's not how they look. They're just like, oh, down like this. Freaking tails are out. I mean, they salmon flies kind of do it too. Yeah. They get dislodged. They'll crawl, and then they're like this, and everything's out, right? A lot of your swimmers don't, you know, your weed dwellers, they're more kind of get going, but those clingers that are used to, they just seem to like, shit, what just happened?
Just freeze.
Oh, yeah, and they're, and it's so.
Yeah. I know that Hydropsyche was Oliver Edwards.
Yeah, yeah.
Our number one selling caddis in our store?
Yeah, I didn't know. God
number
damn
one
it.
Selling that fly is, in this store.
Historically, that is my best nymph ever. Like my probably my top everybody. 7 or 8 days ever nymphing.
And all of a sudden, you notice our guides are still pheasant tail people.
Yeah.
Right? They're still, from the last week, number one fly in the shop, pheasant tail. up this high, work. And run it in the, they're running in the mid. And yeah. So I don't know what they're dropping, but they're number one.
Sculpin.
Yeah, that guy was a superstar. He really was.
I didn't, you know, that really crushed me when you told me he died and I didn't know it.
That was.
I haven't had a subscription to the magazine in 2 years. And so I sit, and I sit literally because I've got them in my can, and I've got my stack of the.
He does. I can actually fly
tire,
verify
fly,
that.
Fly fishing, fly tire. What is it? Yeah. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, fly fishing, fly tire.
Yeah.
There was two. There was two of them together. There was Oliver and Malcolm. Malcolm Greenalch was like Oliver's counterpart. Really great guy. And I'll tell you one funny story. So we were doing a big tie-in expo in the UK. It was in a shop I used to work in. We had Malcolm and Oliver and the tie-in flies. And you know, Oliver's are like works of art, kneecap, you know, the whole thing. They've got everything going, gills, the whole thing. And Malcolm's flies were a lot simpler, but very effective. He was a good angler. And he's sitting there with Oliver's fly box. Now, Oliver was, I've got like three of Oliver's flies, and I knew the guy for 20 years. You know, them are the three I got off him. You know, he was the auction, he was tight. You didn't get him. And Malcolm sat there, and he's going through Oliver's fly box with a pair of tweezers, and he's pulling these flies out, and he's putting them in a big pot on the table. So he ends up with a big heap of these flies. And Oliver goes, "What are you doing with those?" He went, "Well, this one's got a tail missing, so that won't work, according to your theory. So I'm having that one. This one's got a broken leg, so I'm having that one." And he's filtered all of these flies out of his box and said, "I'm going to keep all of these." And the next month, Oliver wrote an article for Fly Fishing and Fly Tying about repairing your flies. And he's done this whole thing about how you put an extra... So what you can do is go in the back end and tie a new tail on. So if you break one, you can go and put another tail on the other side. And that was, yeah, that was Oliver and Malcolm.
Yeah. I don't really, like... We didn't really have... We could go. I could do this for two more hours about tradition, and I love the tradition of fly tying. And I never was like an Atlantic guy or any of that stuff, but I just admire. I got this huge collection Swanee sent me of flies, steelhead D's, and spay and D, and a bunch of Atlantic stuff. I had no idea the dumbass even collected this stuff. And some of them, some of my favorite tires in the world. Right?
Love you, Swanee, by the way.
And there's just a bunch of guys out there that I just admire watching them tie. But the like you said, the styles that came out, right? We didn't have so much of that in the trout world. Or we kind of, there's a few. There's, you know, it really, the styles weren't. We went so quickly out of the traditionals into from no hackle to compared done and all that shit. And then we just kind of right into foam.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just like as soulless as a Perdigon. And it's, but it's cool as shit and it works like crazy. Yeah. But when you conversely take that Oliver Edwards Caddis that you didn't know was his, and you look at the detail on that.
It's incredible.
And you look at Rich's fly, which is equally, it's a super effective, right? But we
tended to R2Z, yeah, R2Z Caddis.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, spectacular. Right?
Yeah, it's great.
Done, right? And then you got Oliver's, which if you had to sit here and do it the way he did, take you 30 minutes.
I remember we were watching a tying video because I think that was the one nymph for a while we had that sold for $350. That every other nymph was $3.
Because it costs a lot.
So why? Well, we looked at the tying video and went, oh.
Yeah.
That's a hugely time-intensive bug.
Yeah, and it had a better hook and it had the competition hooks and all that shit too. But I mean, that's a. I wish I had another hour to talk to you about this, the traditions. And I don't really think it's pertinent to very many people that are much younger than me. But the traditions that the Europeans have, which I, you know, you broke a lot of them out of me for me. But I have these ideas, right? And but then the whole history of fly tying and over there. And then here, you know, we kind of went from the European fly influence. No hackles was kind of like the big giant jump, right? And then then you kind of go no hackle, and then you're trimming all the processes back, right? It's simplest, but I mean, think it start out with a haystack, and then Matthews put a Antron tail on it, right? Simpled it up even more. And then it's kind of cross-dressing as a compare-a-done mayfly, and then they had the ex-caddis, and what the hell is the difference, right? And
yeah.
And there's things, and everything got kind of simplified. I mean, he went from that beautiful, you know, no hackle wing, which, you know, there's a reason people didn't want that. It was a real pain in the ass, and it broke up anyway. But then you kind of just, we lost tradition. Not in the steelhead world. Those cats never stopped. They were always really clean. And, you know, Deck and those guys, I mean, Deck Hogan, Bob and Verdica and those guys that just held true, right? But it was a really small sect of fly fishing. In the general trout world, it just kind of faded. It didn't, there was not much that just got really super elaborate or anything like that or detailed. It seemed to go the opposite. And then foam showed up. And then everything was like, ugh, gross. And there's some really cool foam flies. But it was just
it
like,
great, but
we kind of lost all the, when you look at an Oliver Edwards, like a double duck, or double, what was that double duck? It was a mayfly with, it was all CDC. And it was like, I think it was a double duck. I can't
remember. No, he had a few different flies. He had like the footprint was one, which was the poly. Really clean fly for slick water, and then there was a CDC fly that was based off some Marc Petitjean stuff.
This is a traditional mayfly, just a single set wing, tail, three tails, and then it was an
extended body.
No, straight up, just a CDC body, and then he got this kind of complex way to set the wing back, but it was all CDC. He wrapped. Underneath.
Yeah.
I thought that was a double D or double duck or something like that. But I mean, he looked at it, it's just kind of everywhere and then all of a sudden it's finished and it's like, oh shit. Damn, look at that thing. And you could just see all the soul in that fly, right? And it's like, damn, that was cool. But I didn't have enough time to go into all this history stuff.
Yeah, I've completely lost track of how many takes we've done. So why don't we wrap it up?
Well, wait a minute. I got one, two, three more things. One thing more. There's a rumor that Howard and I will be working together on rod and reel design. I don't know if you knew that, but there's that rumor out there.
There's
I had
rumor.
One question.
There's always rumors.
There's always that we might. This is the world's greatest book in fly fishing history, Trout by Joe Brooks. You know where that is? I want to go there.
I know where that is. Yeah. I can take
Can we go there?
Yeah.
Yes.
We can do that.
Jake promised me if I signed that contract today that I would be fishing with you over here. So
we can do that.
This was, if there was anything that ever remotely made me think about history, it was a stupid book and it was always about fishing somewhere. So I didn't give a shit about history. Unlike you Europeans, God, you and Davey, you know Davey Watton, right?
I know Davey.
Get a freaking street wrong and he chews your ass because you didn't know what in 1600 it was, you know. That's not what street it was, you dumbass. And he goes through this litany. I'm like, shit, I don't even know that much.
To be fair, their history goes a little further back than ours.
Well, that means we should know more about our own, and we don't.
Yeah, I don't. That's for sure. Yeah.
They're talking 1600 and we're talking like, you know, 16 days ago.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know. So,
but anyway, there is that rumor that we will be working, Howard and I will be working together on rods and reels here. In
Howard
very
works
near
for Hardy, if you didn't know that, just to throw
which
the Barbara cat out
would
of the
mean
bag.
Kelly will be.
Oh, it's possible.
And so, but we will be collaborating like that together.
Wouldn't that just be great? Two guys who ruin fly fishing working together.
Sounds a good excuse to fish a lot to me.
two guys that ruin the
world. You don't need somebody to film that old castle fishing
I don't want
stuff,
you to film that because that got a little weird,
yeah,
right?
That was, all right, so let's wrap up with, you got something behind the desk you want to talk about?
I got two things, actually.
Two things.
I just talked about Billy Hood, my buddy, who is an incredible carver. These are multiple things. This is porous cork. They're all different things, right? They're composites, but then he's just like this. His dad was this. I think his dad came to me for a while about asking about painting fish, right? And he's getting into carving. And then it's like, just like Billy, they're super artsy. The next year he like wins the world championships in carving.
Yeah, there you go.
So Billy's been carving, you know, for in carver's terms, not. And he's already just unbelievably great. But then Leslie up there that sent me that painting, if you can't see it very well because I hung it up there. I'm running out of room. She guided with Nathan and they had such a great time. But she's the gal that Ellie Schaefer, I think, was her.
Ellie Schaefer Fine Art.
Yeah.
On the front of that thing.
That's, there it is.
You can get a shot.
That, this is the gal we were talking about last week. And she sent us that painting. And for those, that's, nobody figured it out. I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's the little putty knife type thing that she paints with, right? Mm-hmm. She was painting a bighorn sheep for that, and she was done. And her leftover paint, she painted me that.
It's really cool.
Yeah, it's badass.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I'll put a photo up, but if you guys want one, Ellie Schaefer Fine Art.
See, I had a bunch of paint left over, so I just did Ellie that. Ellie Schaefer. Oh, what a drag to be like that, huh? I'd have 15 gallons of paint, and it still wouldn't look right when I was done.
If you Google L.E. Schaefer Fine Art, you'll find her Facebook. I'm sure you can purchase through there. Super cool, though. Great people, too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really good bronze thing, too. A lot of fishy stuff for bronze.
Yeah.
Flies and stuff like that.
I chat with them for a while in the shop. And that's, you know, we talked about Dallas, who she's married to, right?
Yeah.
Last week with the Wild Wonder stuff. And,
yeah, it was a blast. Yeah, we said that we'd call this out, but I bought Billy's, I just saw it back there, this thing. For those of you who don't know, this is an incredible carving, but the painting, to paint over something this porous, this is like really porous cork, right? And to paint over that, I don't remember how many thousand specks there is in it, but very cool. It's his first wood duck, he said. He said he had two, he didn't want to fuck up the other one, so he did the second one. And so he gave me the second one, but that's pretty cool. But this won't be here shortly because I'm taking it home to put it right underneath the carving his dad gave me. So, but that's pretty cool.
All right, let's do
this week's.
Band? Let's do this.
Howard sucked at this last
time. Yeah, it was terrible.
Shit.
Yeah, it was terrible. You caught me on the hop, though.
Yeah. Caught you what?
You caught me on the hop.
The hell's that mean?
It means I just got off a plane, I was all starstruck, and I'm just cameras. They're all staring at me, and, you know, I had people behind the camera staring at me. It's weird, you know.
Did you see all the comments on the one, by the way? Everybody's calling out my hot mom and dad because of you.
No.
Thanks, by the way.
They are beautiful people.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. All right, band of the week, what do we got?
I quite like the Killers.
Ooh, the Killers, nice. I saw them at Pemberton in 2016. They rock.
I don't know how you do this shit with these memory things. If you ask him in ninth grade what baseball game, he'll tell you who the starting lineup was. It drives me crazy. Okay, Jake, what's your band of the week?
Shit. That's on the spot.
You think?
Yeah. Red Clay Strays.
Red Clay Strays, Jake says. It's the ripper. By the way, just a quick story. My buddy Joe Moore and I used to play this game in college. We'd get really drunk, and you'd have to name a year.
Two beers.
Mm-hmm. You'd have to name a year and name a position. And if the other guy couldn't, let me clarify. This is baseball referencing. Name a year, name a position, and if you couldn't name the Mariners player that played that position, you got punched. And Joe is a lot better at this game than me. My band of the week is Don Edwards. If you don't know Don Edwards is great. Say goodbye to Montana.
I'm kind of torn now. Healy, I don't know. Skinner.
I think I did Skinner already, but they're so good.
You did?
Yeah, let's do it again.
Oh, that doesn't matter what you did, it's what I did.
Oh, all right. Well,
I can do a different one.
Skinner's back.
Shit. Huh?
I'm on the hunt. Check it out.
I was going to go with I'll stick.
Skinner.
Yeah, I was just listening to him.
It's hard to
beat
Skinner.
I did Steppenwolf already because I was on a big Steppenwolf thing today. And,
I hope somebody's making a playlist of all these. I mean, this is...
Why don't you do that?
And maybe I'll do that. Maybe part of my job.
Right.
Howard, thanks so much for joining us.
Appreciate
awesome.
It, man.
We did 7 hours
Jake's
with you.
Hiding back there. Jake, come over and show everybody who you are.
don't need to be out.
No, you do. Come on.
Get over here.
You've been driving the car so I can drink.
Yeah. Oh, we have those rules in this town. Can you see, Jake?
Lower and further. Yeah.
Over there. Oh, there you go.
Awesome. Thanks for listening.
And I'm John McClure.